about you guys? I am prepared to answer any requests. I am here to... I'm always ready now these days. I'm always ready. You never know which way it's going to jump. No question about it. You never know which way it's... Listen to this now. Which way it's going to go? I see this headline. I mean, really, that's okay. We don't need it. I just told her, no. Just tell her, forget it now. We're 45 minutes looking for the clipping. Forget it now. You know, it's a funny thing. You never know which way it's going to jump. And if you're not ready, it's likely to nip you right by the old kneecap. I'll tell you, right by the kneecap. I am very innocently sitting there reading the New York Times when all of a sudden... There's a headline. It's a great big headline on page 40. Sunday, New York Times. Pontiac offering longer tempest. Just bring it up. Bring it up. There you go, gang. That's the way it should be said, gang. Cut it out. Now, that's enough now. Now that, quit fooling with that thing now. Don't worry about that clipping now. Too late. Crying out loud. There you go. Pontiac offering longer Tempest. I wonder, you know, that's a great name for a car. Tempest. Think about it for a minute. Do you know what a Tempest is? Please look it up out there, friends. It's not the name of an 8-cylinder Pontiac. Just look up Tempest. You'll find it's a great name for cars. And more, we're beginning to reveal the truth about ourselves. I suspect in a couple of years, one of the cars, probably Pontiac, will have their higher-priced model. Pontiac introduces the new 8-cylinder, 400-horsepower Deluge. In a couple of years, of course, people get tired of the Deluge after having the Tempest for a while. Then they get, it's got to go. It's eventually Pontiac introduces 795 horses thundering, urging you forward down the great turnpike of life. The new, all-new, fully luxuriated Armageddon. I'm singing pretty good here. Pontiac offers the Tempest. Longer Tempest. I kind of like that. Tempest isn't bad enough, but it's longer. Would any of you please look up the word Tempest? Tempest Fugit? No, that's not the same one. Tempest. I'm Tempest Storm. I'll never forget her. It's funny, you know, that's her real name. And she used to get into a lot of trouble in second grade. Blaze Star had a lot of fun, too. I see Blaze Star's return to nature. She's been getting pretty esoteric lately. Big, did you see that? You didn't see the marquee there on the Times Square? It says, Blaze Star returns to nature. Well, you know, she's been getting pretty abstract lately, and she's getting back down to bedrock. You know, bedrock. Sorry, that's terrible. Blaze Star. You know, that is her actual name. Of course, what nationality is Blaze Star? What is that? That's not. It sounds Norwegian, actually. Little Blaze. Little Blaze Star. You know, in second grade, she was kind of fat. Little Blaze and a very shy little girl sitting back there. Of course, she was in the S's with the Smiths and the Simonsons and the Stevensons and the Smirnskys. And there in the middle of them all, quiet, demure, vaguely overweight, in second grade, Blaze Star, Tempest Fugit. Remember Tempest Fugit? Oh, she was great. Candy Bar was another good one, too. Oh, yes. Don't you remember Candy Bar? Oh, yes, sir, that's my baby. I know, sir, I don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Oh, by the way. Oh, by the way. Hey, cut it out now. All right, all right. If you insist, go on. All right, I'll sing it. There's been thundering, overwhelming demand for it. She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue, but she's got eyes of blue. And that's my weakness now. Lick-a-tick-a-tick-a. She's got a dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks, but she's got dimpled cheeks. And that's my weakness now. Oh, me, oh, tick a tick a thun. Oh, me, oh, my, oh, my. Oh, yes, sir. All together.
She likes to bill and coo. I never liked to bill and coo, but she likes to bill and coo. So
that's my weakness now. Very tricky change now, gang. Let's go. She likes to bill and coo. I never liked your bill and coo, but she likes to bill and coo. And that's my weakness now. All right, there. All right, gang. We've chased the chaff away now. You know, gang, fellas, crowd out there, you know that there's been a lot of angry letters like, will you cut out that bathroom caterwauling? I have ceased to listen to you, Shepherd, ever since the day. And, of course, they seem to show a decided preference for Margie. And there is a little leaning towards the Sheik of Araby, with a third, very poor third, running in the general direction of the National Emblem March, or perhaps Stars and Stripes. All right, let's go, gang. Let's go. It's very exciting. It's very exciting to be an American in these days of great change and social schism. It's very exciting. You know, that we're not really here. We're not really here too. After all, you know, it is Monday night. You know, I'm riding along through the park. It's funny about these car names. I'm running along through the park, and I'm going along. You know, one thing about having a little motorcycle, you become a real student of traffic. You really look at cars. Generally, you come roughly to just a little above their rear license plate, you know, so you can really look at them from an angle that hardly anybody ever sees them from. And you also begin to understand about the aggressions and the angers and the rottenness of about 97% of the drivers. Let me tell you, you really learn about it. And you also, viewing it from that angle, you also begin to see just how abysmally, unbelievably ugly most cars are. I'll tell you, they're really something. Well, I'm driving along quietly with the sun coming down there. And it's one of those nice, quiet days. I wish I had some nice, quiet. Maybe I'll play a little nice, quiet afternoon Koto music now. You just hold on there. I'll play it. Now, you got the scene now. It's fall. It's the beautiful fall. Oh, magnificent. It's a Raoul Dufy day, you know? Oh, the sun is just laying everything out, and each little leaf has its own shadow, and the sky is a kind of cobalt blue with great fluffy white flashes of cloud. Oh, what a day. And I'm going through the park. My little thing, you know, a little scooter, a little motorcycle. I'm just digging everything. The scene is just, you know, it's just too much. You just can't believe that you're actually alive and you're there, see? See? Oh, what a beautiful morning. It's just coming down there. You got it now? You got that soft quietness? Well, I'm going along there, you see. Just like Raoul Dufy, I'm digging the whole nature scene. It's sort of Walt Whitman-esque. Oh, more than Walt Whitman. Of course, you can't say it, you know. No matter how hard Whitman works, you can't work. You can't say it. It's October, and you're buzzing along through Central Park. Central Park, for those of you who are outside of New York, and you have never seen Central Park, well, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, you just wouldn't sometimes. You wouldn't really. We here in New York take it so much for granted, but it is... there are a lot of inroads. The New Yorkers here would like to see it paved over. A lot of hot dog stands and frozen juice stands and a lot of places where you can buy souvenirs, and I'm sure they, a few guys are holding the dike back, but it'll go eventually. You just wait and see. They'll put a big bubble over one end of it and keep it there, and the rest of it, you know, will have tri-decked parking and the whole jazz. It's got to come. But nevertheless, I'm going along through this park, and oh, boy, it's a great scene. Little realizing I was about to have one of those big insights of truth. It was going to hit me right in the, right smack in the mug, you know. And I'm going like, my motorcycle, and I'm looking at the sun. All of a sudden, this guy goes past me. Well, there's a certain kind of angry type who really gets mad at a guy who's obviously just going along and digging it and not bothering anybody. And he said, there's a thing with a big, broad-beamed rear-end car. You know, the kind that has about seven exhausts coming right out through that big 75-pound rear bumper. You know, they stick right out. They go past, you know, and their wake just rocks me. You see, whoo, whoo, I'm hanging out of the handlebars, and I'm fighting the thing. And he settles into the lane ahead of me, you see, and I could see the arm hanging out. There's a certain kind of an angry guy that hangs his arm out the side. You know, that's a typical... One arm is hanging down almost to the road, and the other arm is draped along the back of the seat. You know, he's sort of canted at a 75-degree angle off to the side, and his radio is going, dunga, 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 hey, Molly, hey, Molly, hey, Molly, hey, Molly. Well, this guy, this clown is going along, you see, and he just brushes me, and he whistles past. Well, you know, a little did I realize that I was about to see it there emblazoned right on the back of his car. You all sat there with that all-American music, get ready for it. There it was on the back of the car. There it was emblazoned in great big rusty chrome letters, The Marauder! The Marauder! Ah, great big chrome fangs! Well, that's an all-American type. And the name of his car was the Marauder. Boy, what a name. Oh, that reminds me. This is WOR. Speaking of pickpockets, this is WOR AM and FMsville, New Yorkie. And we'll be here until midnight. The Marauder. Well, I thought, you know, that's a pretty creative naming of a car. You know, when they used to have... The poor Japanese haven't caught on to it. Have you noticed that? They've got a little car named the Bluebird. That'll never make it in the American market. Believe me, we need a car called Tusk. You know, something like a Fang. A big chrome thing. Oh, yeah, think of a Fang. Yeah. Bicuspid. With a little E on the end, you know. A little umlaut over the E. A little arrow running through the bicuspid. Then there's another one you could have. I just thought of it. As long as you're going to name cars, you know, Marauder. The lower price model, of course, would be something like the Thug. So, you know, two G's on the end. Well, Buttercup, no, that's an unsuccessful car that was built for a while in the late 1930s by Sweden. That didn't quite make it at the Buttercup. Well, there are several cars funny thing, the Japanese do have one called Bluebird. And the poor Dutch, you know, Walt, since you're a foreign car man, the poor Dutch have got a car. It's a nice little automobile, but it's called the Daffodil. I mean, that's never going to go with that crowd, you know, with a great big flexible antenna sticking out of the back and the things flying and the Confederate flags and the gigantic chrome thing, you know, the skull and crossbones and that inevitable little Met player in the back with the head going back and forth, the hula hula dancers, the Marauder! The Marauder! I'd like to see a model simply called the Roadhog! The lout with an E, you know. Just leave it go. Just leave it run. All right. The lout. Did anybody call in there with the tempest, what it really means? No? We don't have a dictionary here, but I can tell you tempest does not mean an 8-cylinder car. Tempest. I kind of like the idea of the deluge. You know, speaking of the American life, and we're constantly nobody quite knows what it is. Nobody quite knows what any life of any country is actually. And you know, when you hear these politicians, I love these politicians coming out And people, in fact, oh boy, speaking of funny lines, did you? I got a letter from an outfit called Liberals for Barry Guess Who Water. I'm catching you flat-footed all the time. I'll repeat that. We'll try that again. Let's rehearse that now. Liberals for Barry Guess Who Water. How's that for a contradiction in terms? It's, the world is getting nuttier and nuttier all the time. But speaking of... Nobody quite knows what it is, or where it is, or where it stops, or where it begins, or where it begins to ravel out, where it begins to take shape. Nobody really knows, you know. Let's face it. Nothing is more beloved of a politician or a news writer or an editorialist than to come out with this great orotund phrase, "And once again I stand here and I tell you that the American way of life, the great American way of life, standing like a pennant of beautiful liberty before the world's people's American way of agricola, pumpkin nests, the American way of life." Well, nobody quite knows quite what it is, you know. It's a tough thing, and it takes all kinds of... you know, it takes all kinds of little twists and turns along the way. And I think one of the greatest twists and turns that our life tends to do is to reduce almost anything in the world, almost any kind of a hassle that's going on. It can be a fantastic, gigantic explosion of frayed tempers and psyches and social conditions all clashing in an enormous sea of revolution. No matter what it is, Americans somehow will reduce it, if they can, to a kind of friendly social fete, some sort. A little, you know, kind of a little friendly social get-together. So here is the latest example of Americans at work. Tonight, we salute the hard-hitting, forward-marching people of Lakeville, Connecticut. Lakeville, Connecticut, a tiny town nestled in the hills of Connecticut, just 90 miles south, north, east, or west, someplace outside of New York, a seething metropolis of evil big city sin and vice. And so tonight, we salute the simple American community of Lakeville, Connecticut. Yes, tonight we read to you an item from the Lakeville, Connecticut Journal, headlined, "Big Crowd Expected for Freedom Eat." More than 250 tickets had already been sold last week for the Freedom Eat picnic sponsored by the Area Citizens for Equality this coming Sunday at the Norfolk Town Hall. If weather permits, the picnic will be out of doors from 1 to 3 p.m. But if the sky should open up, there is plenty of room for the expected crowd inside, either at the town hall or in Battelle Chapter. Yes, friends, the Freedom Eat menu will feature baked ham and barbecued chicken, and will be prepared in the kitchen of the Battelle Chapel and transferred to the town hall picnic site. Preparations underway for the picnic got going really well when a crew of people met at the chapel kitchen to prepare and freeze fresh green beans ahead of Friday night's frost. The Reverend Alden H. Hebert, pastor, is chairman of the group and in charge of ticket sales and publicity. Proceeds will go of the Big Freedom Eat picnic will go to the marching, advancing cause of freedom in America. Other members of the planning and ticket committee include Mr. and Mrs. Eddie Cochran, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Sheely, Mr. and Mrs. Edward Sheely, Mrs. Robert Mead, Mrs. Leela Darby, Mrs. Richard Barstow, Arthur Hunt, Mrs. Diedrich Werfelman, Joseph Hunt, Mrs. Edward Bratcher, Mrs. Ruby Sheely, and Mr. John Swing and the Reverend John Hopkins. The community has met many times in preparation for this wonderful picnic, and it's hoping that its efforts will result in a well-planned enjoyment for all the guests at the big event. There will be musical entertainment and singing to be announced later at the picnic itself, and the frozen beans will be served by 2 p.m. So get together, fight for freedom at the big Freedom Eat. Have fun, come one, come all. Have fun, have fun. Da 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 sounds like a lot of fun, and kind of enjoy it. I think, you know, and Americans, of course, it's very difficult to put American, the American way of life right down in words. You know, it's impossible. You can't tell. If you've ever tried to tell a foreigner about America, you just can't do it. It's impossible. Of course, he can't tell you about Ghana either, for that matter. And I don't think he could even tell you about France. But we just don't. Now, how could you explain this? Speaking of the peculiar ins and outs and ups and downs and sideways, how would you explain this one to a foreigner now? And yet every American reading this or hearing this would know exactly what he's talking about. This is the New York Times, Sunday, the past Sunday, September 29th, 1963. This has to be done in a Jersey accent. Hillside, New Jersey, September 28th. A 66-year-old Hillside man has been shooting up Union County the past week with a paint gun. A 66-year-old man. Henry Bayard Clark of Salem Avenue said today he had gone on the spraying spree because he was tired of looking at candidates' campaign posters on utility poles and traffic signs all over Jersey. I paint them out wherever I find them, he explained. They're defacing public property and causing a nuisance, and I don't like them. Mr. Clark, who has made no secret of his campaign, made this statement to newsmen who sought him out. He said he had been annoyed for the last few months by campaign signs everywhere. So last week, he decided to do something about them. He bought green and aluminum paint for his spray gun, loaded it in his spray gun, and he took off. He carries the spray gun in his car and wherever he goes. When he sees a political poster on public property, he leaps from his car and obliterates the sign just like that. Squirts it all over there. But he said he had been careful not to spray paint on the utility poles and traffic standards, where most of the signs have been placed. Mr. Clark said he was no tougher on one party than on the other. Both Republicans and Democrats have been completely wiped out by his spray gun. I intend to continue working right through Election Day, said the crusader. Mr. Clark has the law on his side. It is against New Jersey law to put campaign posters on public property. So tonight, we salute Mr. Clark, Mr. Henry Bayard Clark, crusader, with this little spray gun using aluminum and green paint, showing once again the eternal taste, the taste for good color combinations that has always been part of the Garden State's heritage. Psst, just like that, no Republicans, no Democrats. Saluting Mr. Clark tonight. Now, how could you explain that to some guy from Britain? And yet, you know, we know, we'll know. We'll know. We will not say anything. You know? Go to it, Henry. We just say nothing. At 66, finally got him. Off he went. You know, speaking of explaining, now, I don't know how this little item, I've been keeping this item for a long time. It's got enough time here. Tonight's program, if it's about anything, is about... Well, what's, you know, what it is. I mean, how are you gonna explain the American life? You read novels, you see movies, you see plays, and nowhere do you get what it really is about. In fact, there was an article in one of the papers recently of a young Italian student here. Did you see it? I don't know whether you saw it or not, but it's a long article about how completely different America was from what he thought it would be from, you know, the plays, the movies, the novels, and so forth that he'd read about. It's just nothing at all like it. And he was a very literate young Italian. And he says, I want to point out also that Italy is not the way you think it is, which is absolutely true. Having been in Italy three or four times, I can tell you that's the truth. But it isn't that way. It just isn't. And it's difficult for one person in a nation to explain very much, really, to another person from a completely different culture. A different ethic almost completely. Just can't. You just, an American can sort of shrug his shoulders when he, you know, when another American's around, and that's it. They know. But the Englishman wouldn't quite comprehend what we're talking about. Now, I've been, now again, to, in a sense, to put a sort of a, footnote on this thing. I've always wondered about how and why people seem to think that international relationships can be so easily cleared up. You know, all you got to do is sit down around a table. This is what they think. Either that, or just tell them what to do. They'll do it. They'll be scared. This is roughly the Barry Goldwater approach. You know, we're just telling them we don't stand for that stuff no more. Ah. You know, well, this is the fight in the drive-in technique. You know, the kind of technique where a guy looks out, nobody's saying anything. A couple of guys are sitting in cars. One guy's got a great big tray full of root beer and hot dogs, and the other guy's got some fried shrimp, you know, and a couple of hamburgers and some Coke. And all of a sudden, one guy looks out of the car and says to the other guy, "What are you looking at?" Well, there's a long, pregnant pause. "What's the matter, Mac? You don't want to say nothing? What are you looking at, huh?" Another long, pregnant pause. "All right, Mac, I'll show you why, son of a gun." And he bangs the door open, and the next thing you know, he gets out and he runs around the back of his marauder. And you hear the other door open. You hear a lot of, "All right, get out of the car. You get out of the car. You. Come on, what are you looking at, you smart guy?" Well, all right. And then the door opens, and this 9.5-foot guy slowly unrolls. He's got shoulders like a grizzly bear. And he looks down. He says, "What are you saying?" "All right, wise guy." Pow! Then there it goes. This is the general approach that many people think works out pretty good in international relationships. You know, just all you got to do is tell them what to do. Well, it would be nice. Wouldn't it be great if it was that simple? Of course, you know, I don't know what we would do if there was another politician on the other side saying exactly the same thing. You know, Walt, there was another politician. "What we should do is to tell them, give them an ultimatum, get off the platform." You know, that kind of thing, see? Well, I don't know. We'd really get excited if we heard about some top politician saying some of this stuff, you know. But that's all right. If it's American, it's okay, because we're on the side of the angels. No question about that. We know that. And as long as we're on the side of the angels, after all, you know, anybody on the side of the angels, for crying out loud. Well, this is an interesting and a very complex problem. Now, how could you, for example... How could you put a thing like this in a novel and have it explained? Now here's another Jersey sign. Walter, you got the thing over there on the fire thing? Now watch it here. Now we're all set now. We're going to once again salute the state of Jersey, a festering garden state, a state which, as you know, is famous for seed covers, instant seed covers. It's a state famous. In fact, it has been said at one time that Jersey, probably by 1975, will be paved from one end of the state to the other, from Camden all the way up to Morristown, with pizza parlors driving. We have here a piece that came in July 18, 1963, about Jersey. And it comes from Bridgewater. In fact, from the Somerset Messenger Gazette in Somerset, New Jersey, and Bridgewater, New Jersey. "The explosive power of X number of halves of beer was demonstrated at the picnic in a wooded grove after the Bound Brook Fireman's Parade Saturday. It turned into what might be called, it actually what might be termed a riotous occasion. Some observers likened what happened as something that could very well resemble the Second Battle of Gettysburg. In addition to some 6,000 firemen, tired and thirsty after marching 3.5 hot miles, the cyanamid recreation field on Union Avenue, loaned to the FAMPS, was swarmed on by several thousand assorted citizens of both sex and all ages, plus a few thousand uninvited teenagers. One estimate from a reliable source said that there was more than 15,000 people at one time on the grounds. There are only 6,000 firemen, but there were 15,000 people of all kinds of sexes, all ages, and all sorts of capacities for beer. All right, bring it out there. That's it. Unreliable sources, it says several of them were inebriated. From fights to lost or stolen fire trucks, everything happened. At one time, there were as many as a dozen fistfights going on at the same time, reported one reporter. But there was such a mob then unless you were hard by an embroilment, you could not see the fighting for the fantastic giant milling crowd. All of them fist fighting too. Police blotter reports of what went on are singularly inadequate. Perhaps because of the understandable camaraderie between the cops and the firemen in Bound Brook. Remember, this was a fireman picnic. Perhaps secretly, happiest of all were the Bound Brook gendarmes, because the aftermath of their town's jubilee occurred in Bridgewater. The police had their thing, see? Whereupon any and many, many untoward incidents became finally the problem of the state police, who were called out to quell the policeman's picnic. Despite lack of detailed reports, some people there saw untoward incidents, and state police patrol cars and state troopers had to do their bounden duty and come on and quell the cops. No record seems to exist of 14 arrests reported by an official source. Who's covering up here? General opinion was that obstreperous individuals, collared, were tossed into any handy hoosegow nearby and released next day after dehydration had taken place. Some things noted at the picnic by the firemen in Bound Brook. Well, one named Beer Concerns representative reported the draining of 120 halves of the lager brew on the picnic grounds. Now, these are not half bottles, but half barrels. This totes up to roughly $1,600 worth of suds. This reported quantity consumption does not include contents of beer barrels carried on some of the fire trucks or stops made by numerous firemen in taverns before, during, and after the parade. Buying beer in the picnic area was a very inviting arrangement. The fire department's 75th anniversary beer glasses were on sale at the same time. Purchase of one at 50 cents per copy enabled the holder thereof to quaff all the beer he could hold all afternoon, just hanging out to his 50-cent glass. Reports following the outing that several fire trucks had been lost, and at least one or two stolen. One from an unnamed town was reported finally to have been located out of gas in South Bound Brook late Sunday. Several beer bottles were found in the rear, as well as one pair of tennis shoes. With some 300 vehicles in the area for the parade, there was no parking space anywhere near that number at the Sinemet Field. It might be noted that many apparatus left Bound Brook for their home cities immediately after the parade. They missed out on the real big show. But at parade's end, crews of those who could not park their apparatus on the field began to drive their fire trucks around the vicinity and finally parked at side roads in the Chimney Rock vicinity and the area around Codrington Apartments, thereby blocking traffic for over 17 hours. The firemen continued the picnic, and when darkness fell, many crews, strangers in town, of course, hadn't the slightest idea of where they were and where they had left their fire engines. After, of course, drinking a lot of beer, it was even more difficult. The situation took well into late Sunday before it was finally straightened out. Many youths below the age of 21, not firemen, we might point out, found it possible to get beer in the general confusion without having to show their birth certificates. A lot of them were then wandering drunkenly around the area, pinching ladies. One young man made the error of knocking over a grandchild seated on the knee of an exempt fireman about 65 years old. The kid cried, so the elderly fireman told the youth to apologize. The youth then laughed and retorted, "Go take a walk for yourself, old man." Well, this angered the senior fireman. Witnesses then said he let go with a solid clout. The youth went down and out like a light. He was brought back to consciousness after 15 minutes, minus three teeth. According to those who claim to have seen the act, two gay damsels did a twist number atop a long table about dusk to the accompaniment of a couple of beatnik guitars played by would-be firemen. They are said to have twisted their off-shoulder frocks right off their shoulder and then continued to twist until their frocks were not only off their shoulder but down around their ankles. Many other garments continued to go the same way. Somerset Hospital kept records of casualties from the Jubilee brought in for treatment at that institution. However, mysteriously, the records disappeared. So tonight we salute the fireman picnic held in Bound Brook, New Jersey, in the good old American tradition. How could you explain that to an Englishman? You don't have to explain, you know. And I'm sure that somebody's going to pick that up, you know, and use it to show how decadent are the Americans. Well, maybe they're right. I don't know, but. Have you ever gotten into something, seriously though, friends, as Burt Parks would say, have you ever been involved in something that just absolutely got completely out of hand, completely? Have you ever, Walt, how long has it been since you've been involved in a party or something where it really got going, you know, completely? Oh, somebody called in a tempest, speaking of tempest, a violent wind, especially one accompanied by rain, violent and stormy. All right, that describes it. All right. I think the idea of the car called the deluge, not bad. Armageddon, followed by the hamburger eater. Well, you know, while on the subject of things getting completely out of hand, only one time was I ever in a thing that got completely out of its skull, completely out of hand. And strangely enough, and you wouldn't believe it, but it was a party that was held in the Army, in a barracks. Now, maybe it's because of the situation of being in the Army, you know. There's a feeling implicit all the time of a totally unreal life. It's like you're living in the middle of Oz or Wonderland or someplace. And after a while, you know, you get to believe that you're a caterpillar. Or, you know, a white rabbit or a mad hatter or something. Whatever the rank is or the thing that they assign you to after a while, you begin to believe that's what you are. And you accept the local mores. Well, once in a great while, it'll shake loose. And once when it does shake loose, look out, boy. I'll tell you, I have a feeling that anybody in the world who is living a life, whatever it might be, of some kind of, well, I suppose you might say a totally unnatural kind of existence. They're very dangerous people because you work awfully hard at pretending that the party is what it is, and you work very hard trying to pretend that life is this way and this is the way it is, and you work. But the minute you see that little sliver of reality, Walt, you are liable to blow off the top of the world. Just out of sheer suppression or whatever it might be. I have a feeling that a lot of guys living out in suburbs, way out there, you know, way out in Connecticut someplace where they're living a life pretending they're really interested in the Little League, you know, they're really interested in the PTA, and they're really interested in the penny supper and all that stuff. One day, if given the chance, I suspect these guys could really be the great killers of the world, the great explosive ones, really. And that's one of the reasons why so many of the wild orgies go on up in Connecticut and otherwise calm places, out in Babylon, up in Hampstead. You know, I'll guarantee you that the parties in Hempstead are 50 times wilder than anything they ever even attempt in the village. And yet, you never saw such square parties you see in the village. I'm saying, oh, really? Everybody's very nervous. They stand around, you know, once in a while somebody goes, and he quiets up, sits back, and it's very embarrassing. Somebody plunks a guitar a little bit, and it doesn't work out. But I remember the time I'm in the Army, and they had collected all the dough from our Coke machines, all the dough, you know, from the cigarette machines and all that, and they saved it all up. And this outfit was about to go overseas, so they decided to have a beer party. They didn't know what to do with the money, you know. So they're going to have a party in the barracks. Well, they brought in a couple of cases of beer, and I don't know what it was, the war, I don't know whether it had to do with the Army life, but immediately, as soon as a guy, it was just incredible to see, a guy would take one beer, he'd go, oh, boom, he'd knock over one of the barracks tables. I'll show you, oh, pow, back through the window goes the bottle. The officers, everybody. Well, about, I'd say, 25 minutes or a half an hour after this party got underway, it made Hieronymus Bosch, believe me, look like Norman Rockwell. You never saw anything like it. Guys were hitting each other on the head with beer bottles. The sides of the barracks were cracking. The windows were going out. They were carrying guys out and carrying other guys in. I don't know where they came from. And there was just a steady thumping. And finally, you could hear the siren coming from down around the MP post. And nobody cared. You know, they're hitting the MPs and yelling and hollering. And the next day, the company goes right out to the rifle range like nothing happened. Absolutely like nothing happened. But it had gotten so that, well, as a matter of fact, it was far more combat than anybody ever saw in that outfit during the entire war. But it was the kind of combat that just completely went up, completely out of control. Just completely. Oh, speaking of Blaze Storm. Well, it's good to see some people are getting back to nature, you know, things that are real, things that are... Life is real, after all. It is earnest. Life is stony, and that ground out there is higher than rocky. Get down there and start scrabbling, son. Get down there and scratch that little life right out of that hard, rough, rocky loam of existence. Keep your knees loose, man, and eat it in deeply and drink it in for what it's worth. Yeah, is everybody happy? Is everybody on my shadow? Walking down the shadow.